Good morning, good morning. Oh, you got me spread out here. I'm going to have to be like rotating a lot. I'm not used to that. Most of my teaching is in YWAM in a class, and they pack them all right together in a small place, and I can just focus in. So forgive me if I don't look your way enough. I'm not ignoring you. It's just I'm not used to it. I'm going to repeat what I keep saying each time I'm here, but I want you to understand really why I keep saying this, that I am not a great man of God, I'm just a man of a great God. I want to repeat this because I grew up in the church. I grew up listening to missionaries and pastors and people preach, and they were always so profound and had these great things to say, and then they'd read a verse in the Bible, and the verse was powerful, you know, powerful promises, powerful statements. And in the back of my mind, I was always thinking, well, that's probably true for them because they're so good. But it's probably not true for me because I'm not good enough. That's what I grew up with. So I want to make sure, yes, oh, I'm a missionary. That doesn't mean much. It just means that God called me out. I walked away from a great career and making tons of money to serve God, a bold decision, but it's been worth it, and God continues to bless us. It doesn't mean that I have the entire Bible memorized and that I know everything about God and the Bible. It just means that, and the reason I'm standing in front of you is I have a few pieces that have been really important to me, things that I've spent time in, that I've experienced around the world, that I've soaked in a little more. And because I've experienced these things and walked through more, it gives me something to have authority to speak on. So it's the topic this morning was one that kind of surprised me. I was just spending some time with God and looking over notes and different topics. Again, I don't have 52 sermons for a year. You know, I've got seven, and you've heard just about all of them. So I don't know what I'm going to talk about next week. When this topic came up and I felt like God was sort of popping this into my head, I was going, yeah, I haven't spoken about this in a while. And usually it's sort of a point that I'm making, not the entire message, but I felt like it was to be the message this morning. So forgive me, I'm going to actually have to look at some notes here. Usually I just speak off of what I keep teaching all the time. I know it's like a cop-out. It's like it's too easy, you know, just teach what you always teach. Pastors got it hard. When they got to come up with something each week and it's different and unique and themed, I can't do that. But the topic this morning is a common theme in the Bible. It comes across a lot. I grew up hearing sermons on this, as I'm sure you have. But the messages, I recall this, hearing about this term, this word, and it never really connected with me. I was like, okay, I understand the concept, but I don't see the need in my own life or the value. In 1 Corinthians 13:13, Paul ends by saying, these three things remain. It's one of those three things. Now you got your guessing still, right? When Jesus was teaching, it was fundamental, sort of foundational to everything that he was teaching, what he was bringing to the people in all of his messages. Again, for me, it always brought a blank stare. It's sort of like, okay, whatever. Didn't see the need, didn't see the problem. I think I felt growing up that I already had a lot of this. So, you know, if you have a lot of food and somebody says, hey, I've got food, you're like, so what? Or if somebody says, hey, I've got a lot of money, and you already have a lot of money, you're like, so what? I think I heard this term a lot, and I was like, okay, that's a good term, it's a good concept, it must be good for somebody, but I'm not sure how it affects me. But this one term, this one word, is incredibly powerful for all mankind. And the more that I spend time around the world, in other cultures, with other people, with extremely poor people, the more I begin to say, aha, there's value in this message. See, it wasn't something I would go around and teach or preach or, you know, talk to people about when witnessing, because I didn't really understand it. But now that I have a little more experience in seeing the impact on the world and the need for this in the world, it's now what I believe is key and paramount to people really coming to the Lord. About almost, 10 years ago, our family, we moved to South Africa. It's a part of YWAM. We lived in Worcester, and this is near Cape Town. I spent my first several months there listening, which is not a common American trait when we go overseas. We're usually the ones that go over there and say, hey, there's your problems, this is how to fix it, let's get it going, you know, come on. But I knew, and I had been given some words beforehand to understand them, their worldview and their mindset before you start providing solutions. And so I did that. And so at the base, the YWAM base that we were at, it had almost 40 different nationalities represented at it. Can you imagine? I mean, here we got Canadians and Americans. You know, that's about it. But all over Africa, South America, Asia, all in the same room, all at the same time. Growing up with different mindsets, different worldviews, different teachings. And when I went to South Africa, it was very confusing. I'd be like, how do people function and live here? I saw how people acted. I saw how they would seemingly do nothing, even though they seemed healthy and strong. And if they ever got any money, they'd go get a bottle of liquor, drink it, and pass out alongside of the road. And I go, how can you do this? How can this be your life? They didn't do things very well. Now, this isn't a criticism saying they're not good enough. We moved into a very small little house that we rented right across the street from the main gate of the YWAM base. I used to design and build homes for a living. This is back in the 90s. So I'm used to, you know, quality control, making sure the house is just right, getting the trim boards on, painting is perfect. You know, nothing's wrong. I go into this house, and the paint is just slopped on the walls and going up onto the ceilings and onto the floor tiles, and that's it. Done. And I was like, man, if I were the owner of this house, I'd say do it again. Why don't they take the care to make sure that the trim doesn't splatter all over the walls and the wall paint splatter all over the trim and then splatters all over the tile on the floor? But that's the paint job. And I was really wondering what's going on in their mindset. Then I began to hear stories like, heard the story of a group of, so they have in Africa, South Africa, they have what they call blacks, colored, and then your Afrikaners who are white. So the blacks are pure Africans, the colors are mixed, and then you're white. So quite often, the black people were hired as just farmhands. This had always been the case, even during apartheid. They were the people that got the lowest of the low jobs. They usually would not come into a house and be like a house, you know, work with children or do the cooking or anything. That was reserved for the colored people. The coloreds were trusted more by the whites because they were half-bred. So, what happened at the end of apartheid is the black people came into the power and authority over the country, so now the color people were being oppressed by the black because they were the ones that used to get favor. They didn't do anything to the whites because the whites still owned a lot of the property, the businesses, and the lands. So the black people buddied with them. But even now, even when we were there, there would be farmers in this smaller city. They come into the city and there's a lot of black people and colored people just standing around the streets on street corners waiting to be hired. They'll call out a bunch of them, say, hey, I need 10. Hop in the back of the truck. They drive them way out into a farm somewhere. They work all day. They bring them back and pay them. I heard of stories even now that people were getting picked up, brought out on these windy roads far, far away, working the whole day in the hot South African sun, brought back, dropped off, and the guy speeds away without paying them. How can this be? But what would that do to your mindset? And what I began to understand as I heard stories from my different African brothers and sisters growing up in Africa was that there was a strong sense and even a spirit of hopelessness that had come over this whole continent. And the, sort of the word hope popped out in my mind. And so I spent time praying with God and thinking about this, going, what does this mean? What value is this? Because it's a term I'd heard growing up all of the time, but it's not something I really connected with. I mean, I have faith. Felt like I had love. I trust in the future. So, you know, my hope is there. Do I need more hope or confused? But I look around me and I see all over Africa hopelessness. So if you go over the continent of Africa, you find peoples, tribes, and countries that have all been conquered at some point in their history. Conquer each other. Europe conquers. Everybody conquered. They are a conquered people. And so what happens if you end up being a people that are conquered and you think things are going to get better and then they get worse again? So the end of apartheid in South Africa brought a lot of hope. Suddenly people were going, our lives are going to be better. Things are going to change. You know, during apartheid, black people were not allowed legally to walk down the streets in the white neighborhoods. They could be arrested if they didn't have a permit. And the permit would be so that they were working on somebody's house. That's what it used to be. They were like, hey, we are going to have freedom. Our people are going to be in power. We're going to have everything. So apartheid changed, government changes. 5 years later, people are like, come on, give us what we want. Meanwhile, walls are starting to build up around houses for security. 10 years later, people are like, come on, we want more. Our lives need to get better. Now the large walls around the homes have 4 to 5 feet of barbed wire and electric fence above the tall stone walls. And now they can walk down the streets, but the streets are completely walled in. Their hope was never materialized. And whenever this happens, you keep having this hope that something better is going to happen, and it doesn't. It begins to erode away at hope, where suddenly it's like, I'm tired of hoping. Because every time I believe something is going to happen, it doesn't. And then I get more discouraged. Almost like hope can become painful to even have. Because you begin to lose trust that it ever will happen. So I mentioned this to the YWAM leader, who is also the national leader of YWAM, and we used to go on walks, and I said, you know, I'm getting a sense that really there's a spirit of hopelessness over this continent. He was like, bingo, that's what it is. That's what this continent really needs. That's what every ministry here needs to bring. Not necessarily a new church or a new school or something, you know, material, because those don't actually always bring hope. One of my great fears is going into a country, for example, in a small rural village, teaching them how to read and write when there's no jobs that require it. And there's no way they can leave the village. What can you do? Well, what have you? You've brought them hope. You've taught them for 12 years how to do these things, and you say, how's your life better? Well, it's not. I met a lady in Madagascar when we were traveling around going to small villages there, and we were asking lots of questions, gathering information for a project that we were starting, and asked in this village, there's about 900 people, said, can anyone here read and write? And one lady raised her hand, and she was the very dominant, strong lady. You know, she was out in front speaking and talking. You know, she had authority because she could read and write. I said, great, now what can you read or write? What can you read? She just points at a little sign that was above the doorway, a poster, and the poster had like a few words on it, and it was more of a pictogram, a picture drawing that was showing how to use the toilet properly with the river. She was like, I can read that. And here she was making mats, reed mats with her feet, just alongside several other women, all making reed mats with their feet. So what did her reading and writing really help her? It's a challenge in what it really means to have hope. But as I spent more time in Africa trying to understand why this was a void in my own life, I began to get a new understanding for America. And maybe this will connect with some of you, and that's what I hope for. As I was thinking about this and praying about this, I realized that America is really a unique country. And it started in a very unique way. It started as a country of opportunity, which is a magnet for those with hope. Think about it. Why do we have people coming over the borders and flying into our airports and doing everything they can to get here? What is it? The ingredient is hope. If I can just get to America, my life will be better. If I can just get there, I can get a job and earn money and send money home even. It's hope. For the past 200 years, our country has been a hope vacuum to the world. We have been sucking people in from all over the world with hope. Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island. The people coming into this country were not the wealthiest, the smartest, the strongest. They were coming with, if I can just get to the country, I can make something happen. So for 100, 200 years, we've been drawing people here with a strong hope, to the point where in most schools around America, you'll find elementary school teachers telling the children in the classroom, you too can be the president of the United States. That's hope. You can be anything you want to be in this country. That's hope. I heard these things. Maybe you've grown up hearing these things all the time. So you can end up saying, well, I have a lot of hope. We live in a nation of hope. Even when things go really bad, we don't get to the point of saying, throw in the chips, shut down the government, walk away, let's exit the country. We say, no, we can do it. We can make it happen again. So our economy goes up and has a recession, then it goes up and then has a recession. We keep pushing and pushing and saying, yes, it can become better. We have hope. And that's a unique quality that we have in this country, stronger, I believe, than any other country I've seen. So, how does the world uses hope in a different way than we do? And this, I think, was some of the confusion for myself. So growing up, the word hope was more like a wish. I sure hope that tomorrow will be better than today. I sure hope that I get a good job. I sure hope that I can pass this next exam. It was a wish. And so when I read the Bible as hope, you know, our hope was in the Lord. It's like, well, my wish or, you know, that is, it will come true. But that's not the way the Bible uses it. That's not what the term really brings about and means. There is a confidence in the term hope. It is not, maybe this will happen, maybe it won't. When our hope is in the Lord, it's in something that is solid and secure. And that is a huge, huge, huge difference. So I like to watch documentaries and nature programs on TV. And I was going around the menu and looking for something a little bit different. And I came across something that kind of looked interesting to me. And it was on minimalism, you know, doing with less. And it was a couple of these young guys that are actually traveling around the country, putting on little lectures for groups of people, telling them how to live with less, to be minimalistic. This one guy has two bags and all his life is in two bags. No home, no nothing. And he's like, it's great. And he was describing something at the beginning that really caught my attention. He was saying this to the camera. He was saying, and he's not a believer. He's not. He was looking at the camera and saying, you know, everyone has this hole inside of them that they want to be filled. I was like, whoa, I've heard that at church before. Here's somebody that says, I acknowledge the whole. We all want this to be filled. And then he continues and he says, and we're all about buying more things to fill that materialism. I think I've heard that at church before too. And he's going, and it's a complete waste of time. It won't fill the hole. I'm like, yeah, I've heard that at church too. So his solution is make the hole really, really small. Be minimalistic. If you have nothing and you're happy with nothing, then life will be good. And I was like, what a backwards way to look at it. I mean, I understand the opposite doesn't carry with it the value that we think it does. And I know this because I've had lots of things and I've had very few things. And having life with few things is a lot easier than life with very many things. So the minimalist, this minimalist was going about trying to convince people the hole in your life, the problem that you feel, this need, the way you solve it is just to squeeze that hole down as tight as you can so you can ignore it. His hope is that this hole will not be a nuisance to him if he can just get rid of everything or even the want for anything. You know, I almost want to go to one of his lectures just to point this out to him and go, your hole is still there, isn't it? It's still there. You just put a tight belt around it. So, our hope is tied to faith. Here we go. Hebrews 11:1. Boy, this is a verse you've heard more than once, I'm sure. But it brings up how this is tied together with the faith. Hebrews 11:1 says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Now, this is usually just the focus is completely on faith, but it's also hope. The faith is about the hope. The hope is always for something good, for something better. What do we hope for? You know, this is, you can even answer this. What is it that we hope for in the Bible? What do we hope for in general? Anyone? Huh?
You're asking?
Yeah. Why not? What do we hope for?
A happy life.
A good life. God's promises being fulfilled. We're hoping that these things, you know, that you say, oh, well, that works for the missionary, that works for the pastor. We hope that it would be for us too. But unfortunately, many times we look at it more as a wish. Well, that would be nice if it could happen to me. If God's promises did mean something for me. If the promises were true. Because so much of the Bible has these statements that are, wow, God's promising this? How can that possibly be true? Like this in Romans 8:28. Another common verse. You've heard this before. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. All things. That's a pretty bold statement. I'm sure that the first time they were translating this from the Greek, that people were like, you know, let's make sure we get this word right. Because that's a powerful statement. It could have been most things. It could have been a lot of things. But it says all things. And so, if this is a verse you believe, or you want to believe, that is what you hope for. Now, the condition is, does God really do this or not? You see, there's two terms that are sort of brother and sister that want to work against this. One is worry. One is discouragement. They carry the same exact two ingredients. Only two ingredients. that make up either worry or discouragement. One is the future. The other is a negative event. That's it. Something negative. So worry is, in the future, something bad might happen. You don't worry about good things happening, do you? I hope not. That's a severe case. You worry about, what if tomorrow something will be bad? What if this happens? What if the future, out of control? God not there to help me. What if? Discouragement, the brother or the sister of worry, is something bad has happened and I don't know that the future is going to get better. That's it. So when I was in Africa and these things were sort of coming to me for the first time, and the image that came to me was like some African men walking down a road. Very common sight there. You know, in the middle of nowhere, you'll be 50 miles from what looks like nothing, and there'll be, you know, a couple of guys walking down the road. And so I was thinking, this is like, you know, if you head off down this little path in Africa, you can worry that you might twist your ankle and not be able to walk anymore. Then what will you do? You can be paralyzed by that fear and not even want to walk down the path. On the other hand, you can walk down the path and twist your ankle. Now, the only thing that's going to bring discouragement is because you have no understanding of the future. There's nothing in sight that you can see that will help you to understand that it's going to be okay. If you twist your ankle and right across the street is a hospital, chances are you're not going to be discouraged. You just hop on one foot for a short distance, you're there. Okay? So these two work against the hope, which is an assurance and a confidence in this promise that all things are going to work. Does that mean that everything always works out perfect and you never have problems? Certainly not. But what we can look at our life is we can begin to see that God can and will work things out. This is not despite you. This is, I mean, think about it. If you say, hey, I'm going to go out and after church here, I want to go kill somebody, you will pay the consequences of that. You know, God will be with you in prison, but he's not going to just suddenly say, oh, no prison for you, escape free. You know, oh, great, God worked it all out for the best. It may mean you have an amazing new ministry in prison for people that need to know the Lord. Who knows? When I looked back upon my life and I was thinking about how we got to where we are today, and I began to get sort of the image or the illustration that came to my mind was I was like a horse being led by a carrot. So you know the old, you know, have a stick and a string and a carrot and you dangle it in front of the horse and the horse, you know, follows that sort of, you know, from the carriage driver. That was sort of the image that was in my head and what I felt like in my life, my life's path, that God would like dangle a carrot in front of me. And I hoped for it. And I'd go, oh, that's what I want to chase after. That's what I want. And I'd walk for some time, sometimes years in this direction, and suddenly, poop, the carrot would disappear. And I'd go, God, you took away my hope. Why did I come this way? And as a horse, I would look around and behind the boulder was a huge banquet feast of carrots. And I'd be like, wow, this is great. Now I see why God led me here. It wasn't for that single carrot. And then God would lead me for the next several years of my life in another direction with another carrot. And I'd go, that's it, that's it, that's the goal. And it would, whoop, disappear. And be like, Lord, I've been chasing after this for a couple of years. That's what my heart's been set on. Why? And then I turn and look behind the bush, and there's a pile of carrots. This happened time and time and time again in my life until I ended up in a place where I was looking at where I was going. Back where I started, I never would have come here directly. I needed to be led in different places. And God knew what would draw me in those places. Not that that was the whole goal, but it was the step. It was the next step in my life, the next level, the next challenge, the next thing to help grow me. And then all of these years later, I can find myself in a place going, wow, this is truly fantastic. Thank you, God, for not letting me be satisfied with that single carrot. Or thinking that that was the end of my life and that was my whole purpose, was to get that single carrot. A lot more verses. I'll let you write these down for those of you that are writing notes. Philippians 4, 6 through 7, not to worry about anything. And Romans 15, 13. Actually, the start of that verse is great. May the God of hope fill you with all joy. And this, again, this is not a God that leads you on by wishes. So do you know what the most, what all politicians around the world use to get elected? Hope. Everywhere I go, every time I hear of an election, the only thing they do is sell hope. Vote for me, life will get better for you. Vote for me, I'll do everything you want. Vote for me, you know, you'll be living easy the rest of your life. Every single time, it's hope. And that's what draws the elections. That's what people win on. And the smart politicians know how to sell hope. Unfortunately, every time that hope is brought about and never materialized, it begins to erode away at even this hunger for hope. Think about it. Maybe this has happened a little bit with you in your own lives. I'm heading back to India in a couple of weeks. And there was a young girl there, maybe 14, living in the slums. And I'm helping a project that's helping to teach literacy in the slums. And in India, that can provide some value if you can read and write. It's in the middle of a major city. But in the slums, they don't go to school. The children don't go to school. Their parents, most of the mothers, because the fathers aren't there, the mothers just simply beg. They live in shacks that are, a tin roof. And if you've heard anything about India, it gets hot there, 120 degrees. Imagine what the sun does on a tin roof in 120 degrees. And this one girl, I could tell there was a really strong light, bright light in her. She was responding. She was quick. She was attentive. She had been a part of this program and was beginning to read and write and excited about it. And she asked a question. She said, I want to be a doctor. Can I be a doctor someday? Wow. This is huge hope. The greatest challenge for her is that the odds or the probability in the world, in chances, in just purely statistical, are not very good. Because she doesn't have a real education. She's already 15. She can barely read and write. Can she get an education and become a doctor there? Well, maybe. But it's a very, very long shot. But I could see the brightest thing shining in her was hope. She's like, I want to get out of this slum. I want to help other people. So the question will come back to you. Do you see God in a way that you really feel this hope? Do you really get the picture? Because I don't think I grew up understanding this. So a gentleman that my wife and I went to school with, college. He's now a famous pastor, writes books. You've probably heard of him, Rob Bell. You know, it's like at least something good came out of our school there. Some of you, maybe others will say, ooh, he's a heathen heretic. But he had a great story, and I love this story. He was talking about one day when his family was going out on a vacation and up around a cabin on the lakes, and there was other family there, and he had a little baby, I think it was a baby girl, and they had a little backpack carrier, Have you ever used one of those or seen those where you pop the kid in the little, you know, backpack and you can go hiking off with them? We had one of those for our kids. They were great until my son sitting up there grabbed my very expensive sunglasses and threw them on the sidewalk all in the blink of an eye. But he had his daughter in the backpack and they were going out for a walk around this lake. And he said it was a beautiful sunny afternoon and they were going out there and his daughter, you know, pulling on his hair, going da 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 da, just making all the little child sounds and just carefree, enjoying the safety and the security of being with the father. And he recalls that he was getting around to the other side of the lake and he looked up, and as happens in the Midwest, weather can change very quickly. We used to live in Wisconsin. We said, if you don't like the weather, just wait 20 minutes. And it would change like that. It could be a beautiful sunny day. All of a sudden, clouds come in and boom. And he saw the clouds and he could hear in the distance thunder. And he was like, I better get back. So he turns around and starts walking back and he looks across the lake and he goes, uh-oh, I've walked a long, long way. This is going to take a while. So he's walking back and his daughter begins to get quiet. You know, the thunder, loud sounds, is beginning to get darker. And he can begin to hear those nervous little ticks from a baby. You know, you know, the pre-crying sounds. And he knew that he needed to get back because the child had no understanding of really the safety and where they were. So it begins to get darker, and it begins to rain. Now he takes his daughter out of his backpack as she begins to cry, and he's holding her. And she's beginning to whimper and cry, and he's saying to her, it's going to be okay. It's all right. I've got you here. Now it was too late in the day, and it begins to turn dark. So now he begins to jog and run a little, and he's trying to get back quieter. And his daughter is full out crying. And the whole time he's whispering to her saying, it's going to be okay. I love you. You're in my arms. You're safe. No harm will come to you. Don't worry. Of course, they made it back. They survived. But how often in our lives, we look at the world around us, we look at not knowing what the future holds, we're not understanding who's actually carrying us, and we can sit there and cry and say, God, it's all going to come to an end. I'm going to die right now. The thunder's out, the lightning, the rain, the cold, I don't understand any of this. And God is just there saying, it's okay. I've got you. I know where I'm taking you. Don't worry. Trust me. So solidify this understanding in your mind, because this is the truth, this is the reality we live in, and this is where our hope is rooted in. When you really have an understanding that every single one of us is in this position, not just me, not just the pastors. You may have had a horrible week, you may be afraid of what's coming next week, but have hope that God is working things out. That yes, bad things can happen. And when they do happen, you simply say, okay, God, let's see how you turn this one around. Okay? So I hope that helps some of you that think the way I do. For those of you that don't think the way I do, I apologize for this morning. But I want to give you this encouragement. So let me just pray a blessing upon